Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, back to Bonte, Steiny, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Covey in for Guru, Steiny, Bonte here. Don't forget to download the radio.com app and search 95.7 The Game. Add it to your favorites. And don't miss a second, whether you're at home, in your car, or at work, and use the rewind feature to catch any moments you missed from the last 24 hours, including Marquise Chris yesterday, who joined us right here on BSNG at around 1:30. Marquise Chris, Warriors power forward. You could also tell your smart speaker, hey, Alexa, or hey, Google, play 95.7 The Game. Who has the toughest path to a championship? We could continue that conversation, but also something that Scottie Pippen and Anthony Davis said yesterday. I want to get your thoughts on that, fellas, before we get Howard Eskin here at 11:30 to talk about the Niners and the Eagles. First of all, who are Warrior fans rooting for in the NBA Finals? And is this the hardest finals ever or the easiest? And the reason why I bring that up, fellas, is Anthony Davis yesterday said that this will be the hardest finals ever, the toughest championship to ever win in NBA history. Scottie Pippen, owner of six rings with the Chicago Bulls, Hall of Famer, said, well, I'm being honest, it's not NBA basketball. He's talking about the bubble. It's not the hard grind. It's not the travel. It's not the fans. It's not the distractions. Really, to me, it's pickup basketball. What do you guys think about that? Pippen and AD there. And is this the toughest NBA championship in NBA history?
I don't know if it's the toughest, but it's deserved. Whoever wins this title deserves the title and deserves a championship. And, you know, there are drawbacks to it and there are pluses to it. I look at it this way. This season's already gone a full calendar year because of the pandemic. Training camp started a year ago, essentially, longer than that. As far as the pickup basketball, I agree that it's different without fans. But I do think the NBA created about as good of an environment as they could have possibly created under the circumstances. And it's just different, and every sport's different right now. Football, no fans. Baseball, no fans. I don't really get. I mean, if Scottie Pippen feels that way, obviously he feels that way. But I can tell you that the team that wins the title this year, whether it's Miami or the Lakers, it's going to count. And if the Lakers get it, that's four for LeBron. Period. So from that standpoint, you know, it's as real as any other title.
Yeah, and what have we learned in 2020, guys? Like, we've been dealt, you know, one crappy hand after another, and you're forced to adapt. And, you know, think about this. Because I know there's this notion today that, you know, the players are softer, and back in the day they grinded so hard. I mean, that's been, you know, for decades now. Like, the older generation always feels like they had it harder, and the youngsters today are too soft. And, you know, and I could see why Scottie Pippen would have that take. But, you know, honestly, you're living in a, you know, in a hotel for months at a time. Like, you know, you're during a global pandemic. They're having to go through all these things that, you know, they're unprecedented in the world of sports, right? Really unprecedented in our lifetime, the type of things that we're all experiencing. So I do think you get a little extra credit for that. And I think for me, that kind of offsets, you know, the fact that there is no travel and, you know, all the other things that you would deal with under normal circumstances. Bottom line, I agree with you, Steiny. A title's a title. And when you go in that bubble and you live in there for a couple couple of months. You know, a lot of it is, you know, that mental battle. And I don't think it's a coincidence, fellas, that the two teams that are left standing, the Miami Heat, what do we know about the Miami Heat? They're some dogs, man. They're tough. Like, we know that about the Heat. That's what they, that's their identity. And then the same thing with the Lakers. They're falling in line behind their leader, LeBron James, who we know how tough he is. We know how much this means to him. So they've kind of survived that battle of attrition in the bubble to be mentally strong all the way to the end. The Clippers, they couldn't do it. That's why they're home now, and they're looking for a new head coach. So I'll give these two teams credit for that. But as far as Anthony Davis sounding off on it, like, miss me with that, okay? Because honestly, AD, you still need to go out and show that you can deliver on the biggest stage, because he hasn't done that yet. Now, if that came from LeBron, okay, I'll co-sign. But from AD, keep it moving, young fella. That's where I'm at with that.
Well, I mean, look, I agree that there should be no asterisk with this championship. It's basketball. It's an even playing field for everybody. So to that point, yes, this title's going to count. LeBron wins it. It's going to be his third It's going to be a championship with his third organization, which is special. It's been done, what, twice? But the first time is like a guy actually leading his team. However, as being the toughest championship ever in NBA history, it's laughable. I think about the Rockets in 95. They were a sixth seed. They had to win a game five at Utah in Salt Lake City. All right, they had to win a game seven down 3-1 to the Phoenix Suns with Charles Barkley, Kevin Johnson, and Marley. Go look them up, youngsters. Go see how good those Phoenix Suns teams were. They had to win a game seven in Phoenix. All right, and then you had to play an up-and-coming back. The toughest championship in NBA history, that's strong. That's strong from a guy who's never played the NBA Finals. But does the championship count? No doubt about it. No doubt about it. But look, Steiny and Kovac, I think it's no secret. Warrior fans, who they're going to root for in this championship, it's going to be the Miami Heat. It's going to be the Miami Heat.
For their Western Conference rival?
Absolutely. It's the Lakers, Steiny. It's L.A.
Yeah.
Plus Warrior the fans Lakers.
Plus the Warrior fans have the little bonus of Iguodala on Miami now.
No doubt.
I do think – this is a big, you know, this is a big one, obviously, for LeBron James. And, you know, I do think if he gets this one, you know, now he's up to four. And so he's going to leapfrog, you know, the Warrior teams, which I think will annoy Warrior fans.
Well, and here's the thing. Let me just take the other side of this for one moment. If LeBron James and the Lakers win the title this year, look, like Bonte said, that'll be his third title, fourth title, but with a third different team. Right. He doesn't really have a whole lot left to prove. I know he still would like to accumulate a few more rings to, you know, whatever, make that even a stronger argument for the greatest player of all time. Although, personally, I think people are just dug in on that. There's not going to be much moving one way or another unless LeBron wins, like, you know, three more. I still have him as, you know, one of the two or three greatest players in NBA history. So, you know, I want to make that clear on the front end. But if LeBron wins a title this year, maybe he decides, hey, you know what, it's time to go be an actor, or it's time to go make movies, or, you know, kind of do what's next for him. And also, this is kind of some next-level thinking here, guys. Bear with me, and it may be a little pie in the sky. But if LeBron James were to win a title with the Lakers this year, it ostensibly validates the 3-1 that the Warriors gave up a couple years ago to the Cavs, because you can literally say, yeah, we blew a 3-1 lead, but it was to the greatest player of all time. And the closer that LeBron gets to that, the argument could be made. And the closer that he gets to that kind of takes away some of the sting from 3-1, because when you lose to greatness, it's like losing to Pat Mahomes if you're the 49ers. Does it suck? Of course it sucks. But when you lose to the standard, like, it just makes it a little easier to swallow. And I know that's the other side of the argument. I'm not even saying that I believe that. I'm just saying some Warriors fans might come at it from that perspective. That's all I'm saying.
They may acknowledge that, but they're going to always think about 3-1 sand. And I tell you what else will take the 3-1 sting off, because look, to your point, the one thing that I think took the sting off right away, Steiny, maybe you agree with this, or I want to get your thoughts on this. Kevin Durant signed with the Warriors basically, what, 2 weeks later, July 4th, 2016? Yeah. And that was the greatest consolation prize of all time. It was like, well, if you're going to lose a championship and you're going to give us Kevin Durant – well, that ensures us another couple championships. You may take that because I don't think you get another two championships by running it back with that 73-9 team with Harrison Barnes. So I think that right away, Covey, to your point, took some of the sting off of that 3-1 loss. But the way that 3-1 loss went down, if you just look at that with tunnel vision, the way it went down, Draymond getting suspended, Bogey gets hurt in game 5, Iguodala's looking like an old man in game 6 and 7, and those last 4 minutes of change where you don't score a single point, Curry's throwing around the back, throwing it out of bounds, he misses a wide-open 3 to block. That sting won't go away, Covey. That sting. Nobody's going to give LeBron credit. LeBron James credit for that one.
It shouldn't. I just was just throwing it out there. Of course every Warrior fan should be rooting for the Miami Heat. Just purely out of love for Andre Iguodala, you should be rooting for the Miami Heat. Although, if we're being real, Iggy did the Grizzlies kind of dirty. I'll say that. By refusing to play for them, that was a young team that really could have used him. But now, obviously, he's landed in a very cushy spot. And obviously, Warriors fans have endless amounts of love for Andre Iguodala. I wonder how much, Steiny, you know, the Andre Iguodala factor is going to play in this series. I know that the Heat, they play a lot of zone, so it's not like, oh, he's guarding LeBron. But, you know, the experience in the postseason, obviously Spoelstra has got a lot of insight. Because, I mean, how many times has Bam Adebayo been on a floor with LeBron James? Like, not many, right? So, no. It's another layer in this. And, I mean, what do you think the Iguodala factor does in this series?
It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. He did a heck of a job on LeBron in 15, obviously. Although, if you look at that series, I mean, LeBron's numbers were still
ridiculous,
unbelievable. But he was a volume guy. You know, Iguodala made him go 15 for 35, stuff like that. The one thing I will say is, when you look back at the Warriors' 5 NBA finals runs, you have the 3 titles, and then you have the tough loss when they blew a 3-1 lead. The one we never talk about is, and the one that nobody has regrets about, is the last one against Toronto, because of the way it happened. Like the Warriors, and I say this because I truly believe it, they were champions to me in defeat the last year against Toronto.
Right.
With Klay going down and with Durant going down and with them pushing it to 6 games, winning a game 5 in Toronto, you know, all those kind of things. Like, if there's one, like, that's that loss you can live with, I think, if you're a Warrior fan, the last one.
It's funny, Steiny, because you got all me. Remember we had that argument last Tuesday about Steve Nash saying what he said about the Rockets or whatnot. But yeah, when you watch that series, that Toronto series, I think when the Warriors came back and won game 5 in the way that they did with Klay and Steph, and it was the game where Kevin Durant got hurt, right? Because remember, KD goes out earlier in the second quarter, and just being in that arena, I'm sitting next to JD, John Dickinson, and the rest of the second quarter was a fog, because this is like, number 35 just went down. What, like, is this career, you know, Achilles tendon, you're thinking like, man, is he going to be the same Kevin Durant? And Boogie comes in, he stabilizes the game, and they stole game 5. And they bring it back to Oracle. And the way game 6 played out, Steiny, to your point, Klay Thompson, the way he played, hitting the free throws after tearing up his knee, you know, Steph Curry willing them back. They were still in that game. They were a possession away from sending it to a game 7. And they're out there with Quinn Cook and Alphonso McKinney, and Boogie's basically got no juice left. I do think, you know, when you think about that, and there's a point to be made where people always say, well, we have Fitz on. Fitz said it himself. You know, Toronto, they got away with one. KD plays. That series is over in 5 games. Warriors are three-peating. So to your point, Steiny, I do think Warrior fans say, you know what, that's okay. It was a great ride.
Yeah. That's everybody understands the circumstances there. The 3-1 against the Cavs, that's something totally different. The Warriors, they're just going to have to wear that one till the end of time. The Toronto series, I mean, and I was a neutral observer and all that. I root for the Warriors in the sense that I like a lot of their players, and I'm a big Steve Kerr fan, and obviously they're just the way they play the game is beautiful to watch, you know, when they're at optimal capacity. As a guy that didn't have a, you know, kind of a dog in the fight, if you will, it was just sad to me to see it happen like that, because we got cheated of what could have been some amazing moments. You know, because look, the Raptors, if nothing else, they came to play in that series. So, you know, if KD and Clay had stayed healthy, of course the Warriors would add a three-peat. But I think Toronto, you know, you got to give them their due as well, because they showed up. And hey, when, you know, you get an opportunity, you take advantage of it. I just, you know, for Warriors fans, you just, that kind of was the punctuation of, you know, five straight finals, you got three titles. And now, fellas, to kind of, you know, bring it back to the first hour, like, what comes next is what's so fascinating in all this for me. Because, I mean, I don't know. I'm kind of unprecedented to think of another time in sports where there's been a situation like this where, yeah, there's still plenty of reasons to believe that they're good, but they just won 15 games last year. So this is crazy stuff, guys.
Yeah, and no I'm doubt. Also, you know, and you got to, the other thing is, you know, how healthy are the big three going to be as they enter this period of their careers? You know, how many games are they going to be able to play next year? How many games do you think Clay, Steph, and Draymond will play together next year? Because to me, that's going to be a bit, you know, if they can find a way to play 60 games together, you know, that'd be pretty good, I think. And
no,
you know, that's going to be a big part of next year.
There's no doubt. And you know what? I was just thinking about it. I'm looking at, you know, some of the box scores from Toronto, and that's why I believe. That's why I say I will be disappointed if the Warriors will win another championship. And the narrative is always going to be that in 2015, you guys brought up 2016, right? 3-1 lead. All right, they blew that. They have to wear it. Nobody is ever going to make the Warriors forget about that. But 2015, Kyrie gets hurt, right? In game number one, game that goes into overtime. Kevin Love doesn't even play. Kelly Olynyk pops his shoulder out. He doesn't even play in those finals. And the Warriors had never been on that stage before. So they were down 2-1. I just wonder if LeBron had a little more help, what happens in 2015? That question's always going to be out there. 2017 and 18, well, you had Kevin Durant. You had the best team in basketball, possibly in basketball history. It wasn't fair. Remember Stephen A. going off, and everybody's going off. The NBA's over before it even started. The championship's already won. And Draymond even admitted, once they got their chemistry, Martin Luther King Day, where the Warriors blasted Cavaliers by like 30, 40 points, they knew it was just a matter of when. Matter of when they got to the finals. So that's why I think that one more championship, in my opinion, where that disappointment, if they don't win, those narratives, and I know we don't get sucked into narratives, but it's always going to be there. Imagine what it does if Curry, Clay, and Draymond wins one more without Kevin Durant. There's no questions, and who knows what happened in the NBA final if somebody gets hurt. I think it validates them even more. It makes what they did in the past even more impressive, and that's why, in my mind, it would be disappointing if they don't win one more.
If the Warriors win another title, let's say the Lakers win it this year and then the Warriors win one in the next 2 years. To me, that'll be more impressive than the Lakers title this year with LeBron. It really will, because, I mean, LeBron to me is just, you know, he's an outlier. You know, he's almost 36 years old. He's kind of one of a kind. And he also has a great player alongside him. But if the Warriors can win a title with – if their three best players in 2015 are Curry, Clay, and Draymond, and then they win it again in 2022, and their best three players are Curry, Clay, and Draymond, that to me will be, I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah.
That would mean they basically won titles in their prime and then at the end of their primes. And that's hard to do unless you get another player in there who's a star.
Right. And for all the Warriors naysayers out there, it's so funny that a team that went to five finals and won three of them, there's still folks out there trying to poke holes in their NBA resume. And it's, you know, I'll always go back to, okay, well, if the Warriors didn't deserve to win the title that year, who did? right? I mean, 2015. Right. So who did? So the Cavs did? Right. Well, no, they didn't. They had a, you know, they had a 2-1 lead, and they just weren't deep enough. What was the Warriors' mantra that year? Strength in numbers. So I reject that outright. And even the year they blew the 3-1 lead, they won 73 games in the regular season. So for the folks that say that, oh, well, you know, the only reason that this was a, quote, dynasty is because Kevin Durant came, I will always argue they won 140 regular season games and 31 playoff games over a two-year span before Kevin Durant ever donned the jersey. And, oh, yeah, by the way, beat Kevin Durant's team after being down 3-1 in the West Finals that year. So I'll always reject that outright. But you're right, Steiny, for them to do this on the back end, you know, all the Steph Curry naysayers or all the folks out there looking to poke holes in what the Warriors have done, that to me, it's off the table at that point. If the Warriors, even if they back to a final, guys,
I agree with that.
With this core, it's right. Like, miss me with that. I mean, because five finals, who else was going to five straight finals in this era? Right. It's unprecedented.
No doubt about that. No doubt about that. Howard Eskin will join us in about 8 minutes here on 95.7 The Game Sports Radio WIP in Philadelphia. Also the Eagles sideline reporter as we get set for Sunday Night Football. Niners, winners are 2 in a row, beat the New York teams up, the Jets and the Giants. They're back on the West Coast. We'll have a practice report a little bit later in the show. We'll stay. Shanahan talks to the Bay Area media. They hit the field in Santa Clara at Levi's Stadium. A couple of weeks ago, we talked to Howard Eskin, and he was talking about the Eagles, and he guaranteed a win for the Eagles on Sunday Night Football against the 49ers, and I wonder if he feels that way today. We'll talk about the Eagles and Carson Wentz. And remember, Steiny and Covey, you could jump in on this. We were talking about who would you rather have, Carson Wentz or Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, of course, yeah. Jimmy Garoppolo may not play on Sunday, but think about what Carson Wentz has done to start the season. He's 25th in touchdown passes. He doesn't look like he's accurate at all. He's 29th in completion percentage. Most interceptions, and tied for the most interceptions in pro football right now. Passer rating is down to the dubs. He's last there. The Eagles are a mess right now. You brought up the tie against Cincinnati. The Eagles, what type of team are we seeing this Sunday night, man? They look like a mess out there in Philadelphia.
You know what? I was looking at some of their stats, the Eagles, and they're very – like, they're not getting outplayed hugely. The big problem the Eagles have is they're -7 in turnovers this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'm just looking at – you know, they've – like, listen to this stat. On third down, they're 22 for 47, and their opponents are 15 for 43. So, you know, that's a great stat. They have more total yards than their opponents. They just have to be, Carson Wentz has thrown two interceptions a game in each of the first three games, and even on a fumble in game one. You know, there's just, and I've always wondered this, and I'll throw this at you guys. Turnovers. Do you even worry about them, or is that, do they just happen? Like, you know, the one year the 49ers can't force a turnover, and then the next year they have 13. Is that just – do you guys think turnovers are just – they just happen? Or can you actually do something about them, if you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely you could do something about them. For the quarterback, it comes down to decision-making. Carson Wentz is trying to play hero ball right now because he's got no wide receivers, and he's trying to do it all himself because he's feeling the pressure, and he's making ill-advised throws. We see that with Jimmy sometimes. He makes the throw. You're like, what are you thinking right there? Just go down. Take the sack. Throw it out of bounds. And then defensively, it comes with pressure. Offenses in the NFL are predicated on timing. Pressure disrupts timing. That causes his turnover. So absolutely, what do you know, the 49ers get a pass rush in here, all of a sudden the other layers of that defense start to look better, and they start to generate more turnovers. It's that's not rocket science for me, and I think absolutely that kind of stuff's controllable, because you think about it, Bonte, usually win the turnover battle, win the football game. I think what's like 85% of the time.
Yep, no doubt about it. And Philadelphia are making turnovers, and as you mentioned, they are beat up, there's no doubt about it, but you can't play hero ball. You can't play hero ball. You can't force passes in. And maybe that is due to not having Alshon Jeffrey. That maybe is due to missing Miles Sanders in week number one against Washington. But Philly just – their offensive line at times are giving up pressures. And I thought coming into the season, they had one of the better offensive lines to back in their defense. They're giving up big plays. You watch the Rams game where they're down 21-16. They're driving. Boom, a turnover, and off the Rams go. They end up blowing that game out. So it is weird. It's some of the decision-making. What about last week, Doug Peterson putting the football in overtime? Was that the
terrible.
Right move? Today he's saying, you know what, maybe I should have gone for it. But that tells me that he doesn't trust his offense and defense right now, Steiny and Covey.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wonder, you're saying, you know, Carson Wentz is trying to, you know, be a hero because he doesn't have playmakers. So there's a way to combat that, and that's to play ultra conservative, but that's not gonna get it done either. So nope. sometimes you gotta try to play like that, you know. You gotta try to make plays because it's really your last option. So I'm looking forward to talking to Howard about that and you know, finding out exactly what's going on with the Eagles other than injuries.
Yeah, and for Doug Peterson to come out the day after and second guess his own decision, like, maybe want to keep those cards a little closer to the vest, coach. But if you think about this, their division is so bad. Their tie of the Cincinnati Bengals was the best thing anybody in that division did on Sunday. Okay, because the Cowboys lost, the Giants lost, Washington lost. So even in a game where you tie the Cincinnati Bengals, you gain some ground in the NFC East. So congratulations to the Philadelphia Eagles. I think the Niners should beat the brakes off of this team right now. Yeah,
but you know what? I want to play this cut, and Spadoni, let me know in my ear if you got it. Michael Irvin was on DRK the other day, and I think this is going to be true. This is going to be true. When Michael Irvin, he joined Damon Radulescu, he's talking about the Eagles being winless, 0-2-1, and just they don't want to go through the month of September without a victory. And I do believe the Niners are going to see face a desperate team, a team in front of the nation, under the bright light, said, hey, we're not going anywhere. We're still the Philadelphia Eagles. We still have Super Bowl residue. Here's Michael Irvin, the playmaker, before we get to Howard Eskin, on the Eagles coming to Levi's Stadium being desperate to get a victory.
The Eagles, I would say, even right now, are still better than the Giants. Levels of physical gifts. The Eagles are a little bit better than the Giants right now. But what you're going to get more out of the Eagles is just total desperation. Anything left in the tank, they have to empty. They can't go four games with zero victories. They'll have to empty them. They're going to empty the tank. So you got to be ready for that. And the young team has to be ready for that. You got a young team. A lot of your, you can't go thinking, oh, man, we played well over here. We rolling. No, you're about to get desperation. You're about to see man worry about food for family. Understand what I'm saying? Man worrying about food for family. Because everybody's job is start talking about everybody's job in Philly. So when man start worried about feeding family, food to feed family, oh, my God, you're going to get the best of whatever they got left.
That's Michael great. Irvin on DRK on 95.7 The Game. It is hard to disagree with them, fellas. It is hard to disagree. When I look at this Eagles defense, they're going to be desperate. They're going to open up the entire playbook. And yes, they're not out of it because of the division they play in.
They're not
but
desperate.
You got to go into October. You got to go into October with a victory, man, to feel good about yourself.
Steiny, they're a half game out of first. I'm sorry. They're not desperate. They play in the NFC East. I mean, it's just that simple. And they still got a bunch of games in their own division. And, yeah, you can be desperate till the end of time. You still got to out-scheme Kyle Shanahan and Robert Saleh at Levi Stadium on Sunday. And with that cast of characters, that ain't happening, boys. That's just pretty cut and dry to me.
Steiny and Covey, let's bring in Howard Eskin. Of course, one of our favorites here on 95.7 The Game. Howard Eskin, the Philadelphia Eagles sideline reporter, of course, Sports Radio WIP out there in Philadelphia, the king of sports radio out there, the king of sports in Philadelphia. Howard Eskin joins us courtesy of the Bay Area Chevy Dealers Guest Line. All guests on 95.7 The Game appear on the Bay Area Chevy Dealers Guest Line. Visit BayAreaChevroletDealers.com to find a dealer in your area. Howard, welcome back to the program. Bonzi Hill, Matt Stymitz, Ryan Covey here on 95.7 The Game in San Francisco. And a few weeks ago, we had you on, and you guaranteed a win for the Eagles on Sunday Night Football against the 49ers. Here we are in week number four. Do you still feel that way, Howard?
Uh, it's hard to feel that way after I watch the Bengals and the Eagles play the Bengals. It's really hard to do. So I can't guarantee. I'll give you a money back guarantee. You know what? Even though the 49ers are banged, everybody's banged up in football. That's the problem because there was not enough grass time. There's so many guys are getting hurt. But I still, and I'm not so sure that the 49ers missed Jimmy Garoppolo. Well, they didn't last week, but the Giants suck. I'm not so sure they miss him because I just don't know that he's as good as maybe people out there thought he was. But I can't get not the way this team's playing. I mean, the simple things, and the turnovers are a killer. The simple things. You know, the worst part of the game against the Bengals is when you're lining up for a 59-yard field goal, which is not a gimme, although Jake Elliott's got a great leg. It's not a gimme. And then you have a motion penalty, a false start on the right guard. You're kidding me, right? You're kidding me. It was like, you're kidding me. You know, stupid little things. So I don't even know what to tell you about this team. Are they this bad? I don't think so. Are they not a good team right now? I do think so. They're not a good team. And Carson Wentz, I don't understand it. When a guy has played at the level that he's played in the past and playing at the level he's now playing at, I just don't get it. I don't get it. It's hard to pinpoint. So, yeah, I guess it's a money back guarantee.
Howard, I know that obviously it's so hard to separate playing well and playing not well from the turnovers. But I was looking at the stats, and the stats are fine other than the turnovers. So, are they close?
Well, if you take away the turnovers, they win the Washington game.
Right.
If you take away the turnovers, I think they had a great chance to beat the Rams. If you take away, one of them was in the end zone, which would have brought it back close. One of them was really early in the game as the Eagles started moving the football, and Miles Sanders fumbled, who had no camp time, so he obviously didn't have a feel of it. That might have been a different game. There's so many things to look at, but you go back to the turnovers, and then they had, I think it was 11 penalties last week. 11 penalties against the Bengals. That's just not very good. And Joe Barrow is really good.
He is. All
well and good. But there were too many receivers open, so you could blame the turnovers and blame the penalties, but those receivers couldn't be wide open. And then people in this town bitched that Doug Peterson didn't go for it on 4th and 12, and he's near midfield. There's only bad things I thought could have happened if he went for it. Number one, a sack. Number two, an incompletion. And number three, Joe Burrow completes a 15-yard pass to put them in field goal range to try to win the game. I never thought about anything positive when he was lining up for a punt if he had gone for it. Nothing in my mind would have been a positive outcome for the Eagles. So, and people, why didn't you go for it? I think about what could have happened. I don't think the head coach, Doug Peterson, had confidence in his offense or confidence in his defense to stop them from gaining the yardage they needed to attempt a field goal themselves.
How loud is that chatter in Philly about Jalen Hurts? I mean, we know Carson Wentz gone off to a tough start. He's also got nobody to throw the ball to right now, and I know Dallas Goedert went down as well. But how loud is that Jalen Hurts chatter getting out there in the city of brotherly love?
Well, it's really loud, but here's what you have to understand, and it happens in a lot of cities. The fans love the backup quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
Until he's the starting quarterback. And then all of a sudden, he gets ripped. So, you can look at it different ways. But, yeah, the chatter is getting louder, and it's not at a fever pitch yet, but it clearly is getting louder. There's no question. But you can't – Jalen Hurts isn't ready. Remember, they didn't have any camp. That's another problem. They didn't have any camp. And for him to get the play, so he puts him in a few plays now. There's going to be a play where there's a lateral pass at some point – where there's a lateral pass, and he tries to throw the football. There was a play that he had a read, an RPO, and he pulled it back from the running back, and then he fumbled the ball. So, you know, little things that you complain about when things happen, he's not ready. I'm telling you right now, Jalen Hurts is not ready to be the quarterback. But that doesn't stop people. People in Philadelphia complain probably as much or more than any other, actually probably more than most towns in the United States that have football teams. They complain. But Jalen Hurts is not coming in. And Doug Peterson made that clear this week when he spoke on Monday. He's not changing quarterbacks. Too early to change. And no Jalen doubt. Hurts isn't ready. Jalen Hurts is not ready. So they can scream and yell all they want. And until they get hoarse, they can scream. It's not going to change anything.
No doubt about it. Howard Eskin here on 95.7 The Game Sports Radio, 94 WIP, the Philadelphia Eagles sideline reporter here on 95.7 The Game, courtesy of the Bay Area Chevy Dealers guest line. Howard, as a Philadelphia Eagle, we look at their defense and we look at Fletcher Cox and Darius Slay now on that side of the football. Who do you think the Eagles will rather face at quarterback for the 49ers? Is it Jimmy Garoppolo or Nick Mullins?
I don't think it matters. I really don't think it matters. I can't see how Jimmy Garoppolo is coming back from a high ankle sprain after only two games. But that's not me. I mean, obviously right. The 49ers have to make that decision. But I don't think they care. If they put pressure on the quarterback, if they don't make mistakes in the secondary, first of all, pressure helps with some of the mistakes because you don't have as much time to throw. And you stop the running game, it's like every team tries to do the same thing. They did a good job with the running game against the Bengals. It was a good job. But they didn't stop the pass. Joe Burrow had, 360 yards or some ridiculous number last. And he got sacked eight times. He got sacked eight times, and he still had well over 300 yards.
Got hit 18 times, I saw, Howard. He got hit 18 times in that football game.
I know. It's a joke. He's a tough guy, and he's a good quarterback. And he's only a rookie. So they're going to be good if they ever fix some of the other parts of their team. But the hell with the damn Bengals. The Eagles have issues. And Fletcher Cox, by the way, he only shows up. He's only shown up part of the time. Fletcher is a really good player, but he has not been a good enough player on that defensive line. I'll tell you, Brandon Graham plays his ass off, really plays hard. And he's in there. And I'm impressed with Malik Jackson, the tackle. He was hurt all last year. The Eagles signed him last year. I'm impressed with him. Hargrave, who they signed in the offseason, was coming back from a severe injury and had nothing. And then he missed what the first game, I think it was just the first game. So he's not ready yet. But their defensive line, and Barnett has flashes. He's the other defensive end. But they just have to get a pass rush. And once they get a pass rush, then you got to hope that the guys don't make mistakes in the secondary. Now, the Eagles have lost one of their corners this week. Avante Maddox is not playing. I don't know if he's going to be out 1 week or 2 weeks, but he's not playing. So they're hurt a little bit in the secondary. They don't have – I don't know who they can have to go deep on offense. Deshaun Jackson's in and out. I don't know what his issue is. They say he's got a hamstring. He's not getting the ball enough, but teams are taking away the deep ball. And without Jalen Reagor, who's out at least another 3 weeks, he's their first-round pick, the wide receiver. Yes. He's out at least another 3 weeks because they put him on injury
short
reserve
IR.
Today.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So I don't even know where the deep ball comes from. I don't know who they go to. And they use two tight ends a lot, and Dallas Goedert's out for at least 3 weeks. He's got a crack. I think he's got a cracked bone in his ankle. It's not I can tell you right now it's not very good. Let me tell you something. If they beat the 49ers this week, you guys ought to shut it down, and that team ought to never be spoken about again, because that would be a total embarrassment with what the Eagles are coming at them with. Anybody can beat anybody. It would be hard to think as a 7-point underdog the Eagles are going to win, but Who knows? If they get a couple of turnovers, who knows what can happen? But the reality is the 49ers ought to be embarrassed if they lose to the Eagles the way they're playing right now. So I'll leave,
well, hopefully,
that's my guarantee is if they lose, they will be embarrassed.
Well, hopefully we see you on the sidelines with that mink jacket, that mink coat, Howard, this Sunday night when the Eagles take on the Niners. Good stuff as always, Howard. Good to catch up with you.
Nobody's traveling. I'm not going.
Yeah.
We do all the broadcast teams in the NFL, the radio broadcast teams, all do the games from home. Baseball did the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the playoffs should be done by the networks with guys in the studio. It's you know, I miss it. I don't miss Santa Clara. San Francisco, I would miss. But who the hell? Stay in Santa Clara. You're in the middle of a bunch of tech companies. That's all. That's all. It's out there. It's a joke. It's a joke. Stay in Santa Clara. Give me a break.
I'll give you that one, Howard. We don't feel Santa Clara. There's nobody in the Bay Area on a Friday night saying, hey, let's go down to Santa Clara, have some dinner.
Yeah.
Let's go to Santa Clara to hang out.
We'll go to a wharf. Oh, they don't have a wharf in Santa Clara. I mean, like, give me a break. Santa Clara.
Howard, good stuff as always, man. We'll catch up with you soon as the Eagles take on the Niners. Thanks for the time today.
All right. Hey, it's always my pleasure. I just hope the Eagles win so I can show it up here, you know what.
A nice parting shot. They'll react from that. Howard Eskin, Sports Radio WIP here on 95.7 The Game. We'll react to what he had to say about the Eagles and Niners this Sunday night. Brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking. No compromises.
Now back to Bonte, Steiny, and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
The segment brought to you by Safeway. Safeway is here to get your morning off to a great start this week. From open to 10 p.m., visit any Starbucks kiosk inside Safeway. Buy any grande beverage and pastry for just $5. That's right, just $5 for a delicious grande beverage and pastry at Starbucks inside a Safeway. Come in and explore. By the way, I want to pass this note along before we continue to roll on. Niners and Eagles this Sunday night. Kerry Crowley of the Bay Area News Group just talking to Farhan Zaidi, president of baseball operations for the San Francisco Giants. Expectations will go up in 2021, Steiny and Covey, and the goal is to make the playoffs. That's talked about eternally in clubhouses every day, but this is the first time Zaidi
understood
that the Giants are publicly moving beyond the meaningful baseball deep into the year goal. Farhan expects playoffs. So the bar, Steiny, to your question, you talk about the expectations. Will they change after this 2020 season, 60-game sample size? Well, it has changed. They're expecting bigger things in 2021. We'll talk about that a little bit later here. Howard Eskin. All right, to Howard Eskin from Philadelphia?
Well, first, real quick, that's surprising me. That surprises me a little bit that Farhan would go that far. And you know what that tells me is – Kapler's on the hot seat. I think that's a pretty strong statement to say. I mean, it's one thing to say, look, we expect to make the playoffs. We expect to make the playoffs every year. But it sounds like what he's really saying is we're going to take the next step next year. And to me, that's a little bit different.
That's very different. Covey, what you think about Farhan there? Farhan Zaidi there.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. Like, there's plenty of reasons to be optimistic, and this was a feel-good season. It's just hard for me to really extrapolate, you know, how many gains they actually made, knowing that this season was so unlike any other, no fans. You know, there's still obvious holes on this staff and, you know, across this team. I just, you know, I can go back to I think Farhan has done things since he's been here, and you know, his ability to identify talent, I think, has really been the thing that stood out to me the most, and talent that gets undervalued by other GMs and other clubs around baseball. So I think that's where, you know, if you know, you can feel like this team's headed in the right direction. But let's make no mistake any about it, guys. They are still a long way away, and I love the fact that they seem to have embraced kind of, you know, the where baseball's at here in 2020 with, you know, launch angle, things like that. I mean, it was their best offensive year in, you know, what, like a decade and a half, something like that. So good because baseball's changed, and the Giants were painfully behind the times. But this is still a pitcher's park. So getting quality starting pitching here is the thing that's going to give them the edge. And I know they made, you know, some changes to the dimensions and whatnot, but this is still going to be a place for pitchers to feast. And for the Giants, if they want to actually create a, quote, home field advantage, we saw when they won 3 World Series titles in 5 years, that was with quality starting pitching and having a quality bullpen. So that needs to be the focus. But by and large, you know, I think Farhan is continuing to kind of prove to me, you know, as, you know, now year two's gone by the books, that he's doing things the right way, and Giants fans should feel pretty good about it.
No doubt, no doubt. 888-957-9570, your reaction to Howard Eskin saying that if the 49ers lose to the Philadelphia Eagles, they should be embarrassed. Embarrassed. I mean, that's just strong right there, Howard. I think he's trying to set it up for the Eagles to come out here and pull off the upset of the season or something like that. The Eagles, you look at on paper, they have some talent, man. I don't think it's far-fetched that the Eagles not only cover the spread, that they come to Santa Clara and win a football game. I think this is a dangerous game for the 49ers.
I agree. And, you know, whenever I was looking at the stats, and the stats, other than the 7 turnovers, the minus 7 in the turnover department, it doesn't look like a team that hasn't won a football game. And because it's Carson Wentz, you know, who I think is pretty good. Obviously, he's struggling, but he's certainly got the ability to, he's got the ability to have a big game. So, no, this is not it. This is far less of a gimme to me than the last two.
See, I think this is just about on par with the last couple of games, just because, and the Eagles at full strength, I agree with you. That's not going to be an easy out. But Howard hit on it. Fletcher Cox, he shows up kind of when he wants to. He can be really dominant at times, and then other times it's like, where was Fletcher Cox today? So he's kind of, right. We know players like that in sports, unlimited ability, unlimited talent, but, you know, the motivation might not always be there from Sunday to Sunday. And they don't have any weapons. I mean, if you're Robert Saleh right now, okay, make sure Miles Sanders doesn't rush for, you know, 150 yards. Sell out to stop the run and make Carson Wentz beat you. Right now, Carson Wentz can't beat anybody. And it's not even totally on Carson Wentz. I mean, you know, Jalen Reagor's out. They don't have Alshon Jeffrey. He's throwing to Greg Ward. And really, we know the Eagles love to run a lot of double tight ends. And right. Dallas Goedert's out now, too. Dallas Goedert was probably their most, like, under-the-radar dangerous weapon, because when you think of tight ends in Philly, of course, you think of Danville's finest Zach Ertz. But Dallas Goedert was the guy that, you know, because Ertz gets all that attention, he was the guy making all the big plays. So now that's not even there for him. I mean, in a way, you kind of feel bad for him, but sorry, I'm not going to feel bad for any coach that comes out the next day and second guesses his own decision. Like, I'm sorry, that just, to me, if you're a member of that Philadelphia Eagles team and you hear your coach do that, you're just like, oh man, like, not everything needs to be on the record, coach.
Does that bother you, Bonte?
What, that Doug Peterson came out there? I mean, I like the honesty, to be honest with you. I like it. If he's going to be honest and say, you know what, I should have probably – I can accept that because Doug Peterson does have a Super Bowl under his belt, right? He has a ring. He's built up that equity. He has that clout there in Philadelphia to where, you know what, I probably should have gone for it at midfield. But what Howard said, look, if you don't convert a 4th-and-12, the Bengals are going to get the ball at midfield. They're 15 yards away, and if they're throwing the ball around the yard – 20 yards, boom, you're setting up for a game with a field goal, then all of a sudden the town is crushing you for going for it. So I have no problem really with Doug Peterson saying it. I'm a little surprised because coaches usually aren't that forthcoming after a game or 2 days later, but I got no issue with it, Snidey.
Yeah, I'd rather have a guy do that than a guy stick to his guns when he's made a bad call.
Right.
And the guy who says, well, I do it 10 out of 10 times. And you're thinking to yourself, well, then you're going to go 0-10 in that situation,
right?
You know, I'd rather hear a guy say he made a mistake than sticking to something ridiculous,
right?
I didn't even mind the actual decision. At that point, it was the right decision. That's the thing. Like, why are you second-guessing what was the right decision at the time? You're not going to make a, 64-yard or whatever the hell it was. Like, take the tie. Like, that is the best play. I was the guy last year that thought the 49ers should have played for the tie once all the things had happened in that Seahawks game where they got down to the end. I thought they should have played for the tie. It would have been the best move for them at the time, I felt like. Was it optimal? No. And I think that's kind of what Coach Peterson was more driving at. He was more disappointed at the way the game unfolded and the fact that it ended up with a tie against the Cincinnati Bengals, and he was trying to rationalize that and trying to come to terms with that. That's what he was probably regretting more than that actual decision. But either way, this is a very banged up Eagles team, and let's face it, they're not world beaters when they're at optimal capacity. So honestly, I do feel like the Niners should beat this team and beat them comprehensively. I mean, what they showed us last week, fellas, with second string or third string guys, you got Jason Verrett and Dante Johnson playing a bunch of snaps at corner, right? I mean, you know, you got Jerick McKinnon, who hadn't been on a football field in 2 years until a couple of weeks ago. You got Brandon Ayuk in his second NFL game going over 100 total yards. You got Jeff Wilson Jr. with a couple of house calls. You know, Kerry Hyder on that D-line, I think he's come a long way. And then even, you know, your leaders like Armstead and Warner, I thought they played terrific games. So I think if you're looking for real signs, guys, that last year was not an anomaly, but last year was like the laying of the ultimate like foundation for this team, really it was kind of the erecting of the house, if you will, because they laid the foundation the first 2 years when they kind of overhauled this roster. But this, to me, this is validation of what they did last year, where it's whatever you want to call it, culture or, you know, winning identity. Like, Kyle Shanahan knows what the hell he's doing. He can scheme guys up. And there is an institutional belief from 1 through 53 that when somebody goes down, somebody else is going to step in and do that job and do it at a serviceable level. And it's not like that for all of the teams around the NFL. So I think that should have, like last week's win over the Giants, that should have 49ers fans feeling terrific about where this organization is at right now.
Eagles are better coached than the Giants and Jets. They got a better quarterback than the Giants and Jets. They got a better defense. And who knows if George Kittle's going to play this Sunday? Who knows if Debo's going to play this Sunday? And those odds, maybe you could beat the Giants with your B team. I'm not sure if you could do that with the Eagles. I'm not sure. A team that is desperate for a win. Let's bring in Admiral Kaplan, coming up next here on 95.7 The Game. Our 95.7 The Game insider, he's close to the Philadelphia Eagles as well as Howard Eskin. Adam Kaplan will join us coming up here on 95.7 The Game, and that will be brought to you by Freebob Bank, full service banking, no compromises.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.